I'm still flying high from the fact that I lived.
Yeah.
It hasn't really sunk in yet, although the Hellers, yes, they were my neighbors. I knew them very well, and I feel so badly for the grandparents. They're still alive. Yeah, that's just will be something that will be very difficult to overcome. They're going to be a hard time.
Could you tell me a little bit about just your experience that night, starting from when you were in your house?
Okay. I've been telling a lot of people. Get comfortable again. I'm starting to hurt. I had gone upstairs, which is important to the story, to take a shower because I like the shower up there. And I had just gotten out of the shower and I was still just in my undies. And I heard this horrible noise, very loud noise, and I recognized it. I've heard tornadoes and I've heard a mudslide before. I knew what was happening. But I didn't have any warning. I heard a noise and suddenly I'm like a piece of weightless popcorn being tossed around all over the place and slamming into things and everything. And then I don't remember anymore for a while. When I came to, I had a large goose egg hair on my forehead, so apparently I was out for a little while. And I could look, and my heart was just pounding, and I was, I had so much adrenaline, but I looked, and I could see some tree limbs. I was underneath this shelf edge that I figured out by feeling that it was part of the styrofoam roof of the house. And that's why the upstairs is important, because I was way up high. And it was canted at an angle. And then there was a bunch of debris piled right here. But there was just enough room for me underneath there.
Under the roof?
Underneath that piece of roof, yes. And I was hanging kind of head down at an angle with my feet up this way, so I was fairly uncomfortable. But I was getting rained on, and it was very windy, and I kept telling myself, you can breathe. You saw the tree. You're not buried. You must be near the top of the pile, wherever it is. And I had no idea it was that big of a slide at that point. And so the moon, or I didn't know there were searchers already out there. It might have even been some lighting from them, but it went away. And I had decided that I'm going to see if I can squirm out of here. So I'm working my way out, feast first uphill. And then I realized I can't see those tree branches. I can feel them with my feet. I know they're there. And I'm getting soaked. And the rain's coming down, and this is not a good idea. If I get out of here, I can't see what I'm doing, and this is going to be really dangerous. I'm better off back where I was. So we go back underneath there, but as I went to do so, I put my hand out this way, and I touched a plastic bag, and I instantly knew what it was, because I had a large plastic bag up there in my sewing room, which was upstairs, and it was full of polar fleece yardage.
Yarn?
Yardage. I hadn't cut it up yet.
Oh, so cloth.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hadn't cut it up, so it's like long lengths of 60-inch wide polar fleece. So right then and there, I knew I was going to live. I was going to live. I was meant to live. God put that there for me so that I wouldn't die from hypothermia. So I squirmed back underneath there, and I untied the bag and pulled the polar fleece kind of up over me, and then pulled the bag over me to try and shield me from some of the rain anyway, and proceeded to wait until morning. it wasn't pleasant, it wasn't fun. I got terribly cold, and I had awful leg cramps. And I suppose because I was, you know, at an angle, I don't know, but I was screaming with the leg cramps at times. And during the night, it was still really dark, I heard a very strange thump, 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 thump. What is that? And at first I thought it was somebody poking through the wreckage with a pole or something. And I'm hollering out, "Hey, I'm over here," you know. And thump, 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 thump. And then I realized, oh, it's one of my dogs sitting up there wagging its tail.
Oh my goodness.
It was sitting on the roofing panel above me and couldn't get to me. I'd heard a dog whine earlier, and that was the sound the tail made. So I talked to the dog during the night and told it to bark when somebody came so that if I was kind of half out of it, I'd be able to holler. And I haven't seen her. She wasn't there in the morning when it got light. And I squirmed out of there and I looked, and it was a tree that was kind of at an angle. And I thought, not a good idea to climb down that tree. And I couldn't really see anything, but it was leaning up like this. And so I decided, I took a couple of the chunks of polar fleece with me, although they were just loaded with water. And I walked toward the back corner of the house that would have been farthest up the hill, closest to town.
Is this when it started to get light?
Hmm?
Did you move when it started to get light, or?
I waited till it got light.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. Till I could see what I was doing. And what had happened, and I didn't quite get it yet, but I did see that, I did realize, oh wow, the house had slid down mostly intact. And then it slammed into the old shop, and the bedroom that was Addie's and our bedroom down below shot off and continued farther, and they found pieces of it in the water. And when it slammed into the shop actually twisted and deformed, and the face of it that had been closest to town was now pointed uphill, and it was canted at an angle like this. But it stopped the rest of the house from going any further. And the upper floor that I was in with the roof kind of detached and slid forward a little bit and angled down like this. There's a big gap. I looked, and there's my towel rack with my towel hanging on it. I almost want to grab it, but I thought, leave it there, won't help you. And I looked out there and I realized how big that slide was. And I couldn't believe it. It was, and I knew it was all soupy, and there was water coming down, and I couldn't see any trees, so I thought, don't head that way. And I looked down towards the other corner, and I could see some debris and some logs and stuff, and I thought, I'm gonna have to go that way. And had I known, boys' bedroom and survived pretty much intact, and I remember kind of looking in there, but I didn't. There was a bed in there that was dry under the roof with blankets. I would have been a lot better off.
Oh yeah.
But I didn't know it was there, and I might not have been able to get to it safely. And as I got ready to leave, I was thinking, I don't know how far I'm going to have to walk. I don't know how long it'll be before I find somebody. I knew Wrangell Search and Rescue would be out. Although when I saw this, I was thinking, when I don't show up for work in the morning, somebody will realize something's really wrong and they'll call Wrangell Search and Rescue. I thought it was a small slide.
Right.
But then I looked and I thought, wow, I hope Wrangell's still around, you know? So I thought, I don't know if or how long it'll be before I find someone. And I was shaking really hard, so my feet, right at that corner of the house, was this bag. And this is part of the story. It's full of women's extra large and large jammy bottoms I buy at the thrift stores. And they're really good quality polar fleece. I shouldn't be telling my secrets.
Is that in the bag that you found?
Yeah. And I cut them up and I can get two or three little items that I like to make out of them. And I had a bag just full of pajama bottoms. And so I put this pair on my head and just pulled it over my head and then wrapped the legs around my neck and knotted it on. And then I put my arms in another pair and I pulled on another pair. And then there were some scraps in the bag that are laying around that I could just wrap around my feet to protect them. And I took the bag with the rest of the jammy bottoms with me because I knew once I got past that mud flat, I was going to be all muddy and horrid, and I would want to get some warm, dry clothing on. So I had that with me, and I just decided to start going. As I couldn't go very fast, but I decided to just keep going. And I was about halfway across the debris field. I found a piece of siding from off the house. And when it was a really soft spot, I'd throw that out there and kind of step across it till I could get to a piece of debris that was more solid. And then I'd grab it and go to the next one. And I have no idea how long it took, but I was so cold. Because then I'm out in the wind and the rain and everything. And I am so cold. And I get about halfway across that field and I can see where the trees are standing up and there's a great big log jam there, so it's an edge. And I see hats coming through the trees, baseball caps. And people! Boy, am I glad to see you! And they heard me yell and they came and got me. And it was not easy to get me across the rest of that field. It took about six or seven of them. They put me in a sled and dragged me across that field. And, you know, I should know them, but by this time, I don't remember who was in the ambulance. I don't remember really who they were. But my son's in Wrangell Search and Rescue, too. The one, he's not here, but he doesn't live here anymore, but he's a member. But I know them, but I can't put a face to the name because I was still just concentrating so hard on surviving. And they took me down and they had to carry me across some things. And they worked so hard to get me over there because they were dragging that sled and they didn't have the plywood and they're heavier and they're sinking in stuff. And then they got me to a place where I could walk a little ways and then put me in this toasty warm truck. And I'm just shivering so hard. And they took me down to a dock somewhere, I don't know, really remember where, and put me in a boat, took me across to the Pass Creek Landing, put me in the ambulance, and I came here. So that's how I lived. I think it's a miracle. I had exactly what I needed to be able to survive. And I wasn't afraid because I knew I was going to. Other than that first initial, my heart pounding when I went flying through the air. But as soon as I touched that polar fleece, I knew I'm going to live. I'm going to make it. And I'm still flying high from that. You know, it was an exciting and a wonderful gift to still be alive. And I have an awful lot to be thankful for Thanksgiving. I love my house. It's just stuff. You know? It's just stuff.
So. How has it been for you in these few days?
Pardon?
How has it been for you in the few days since, just in the hospital?
Oh, it's actually been kind of fun. I've talked to a lot of people I haven't heard from in a few years, and it's been really nice.
They're all
Everybody's
out
calling. You know, I actually had to say a couple of times, I'm taking painkillers. I want to sleep. Don't put anybody through unless it's the state troopers. You
right.
know? And then the Coast Guard brought my son in. He's in Kodiak Search and Rescue. And he's a member of the air crew on the C-130s. So they brought him down, and I've got him here. And he got here really quickly. And it was a good thing, because I guess they reported me dead first, but I'm glad that I can prove them wrong. But I'm sure there's tough days ahead, you know. But it's been a good thing, because I know that God does watch over us, and I knew he knew exactly where I was, and for some reason I'm still supposed to be here, so I am. And I'm very happy about it, and I have to say, I've been treated so wonderfully here, and Wrangell Search and Rescue is absolutely fabulous, because I knew they'd be looking. I knew that they'd be out here looking for me, so. And when I think about how dangerous it was for them to be out there that night looking for people, and it's just, they put all of their own lives at risk. And they are to be commended, every single one of them. And I know that now that I realize the extent of it and how much more work there is to be done, one of my friends came in, and I looked at him and I said, and he's not a member of the crew, but he'd been out in his boat trolling back and forth. Everybody from the community was out there looking for survivors. And I looked at him and I said, "You look almost as tired as I am." And he was. They had just been pushing themselves. So I'll heal up. I don't have anything broken. You know, I'm just kind of sore. I'm pretty sore. But I'm going to make it.
Are you able to walk around? Mm-hmm. You're able to walk around. Walk around. You can walk.
Well, I'm going to have to for a while, because I don't have any car left. Yeah. Actually, well, I got that one taken care of. We've got something in Seattle we can have set up if I need it. But yeah, I've been using a walker for a little bit. But that's my plan, is to just go as slow as it takes until this body's caught up with healing, and then I got to go see my third graders. Yeah, they're sending me pictures, and I work in the third grade classroom.
Oh, here at the district, Wrangell?
Yeah, yeah. I'm a teacher's aide there, and I just love those kids, and I miss them. But I thought about them, and that was another reason to live, you know. And I heard that when they heard that I was actually alive, they got a little rowdy.
I thought they were really excited.
Yeah. But it's just a good thing that, you know, I lived, and it simply cannot be explained any other way than it was a miracle. That's the only way it can be explained. Anyway.
So how does your body feel? You're really sore right now.
Oh, I've got bruises all over me. Yeah. And I had a couple of spots that were especially painful, but those are fading now. And I'll be all right. It just takes time for your body to work that stuff through. It'll be okay. And I just have to be not get going too fast too soon. Yeah. But I'll be all right, and looking forward to getting up and getting around and getting kind of tired of this bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
can you tell us about the shirts?
Hmm?
Can you tell us about the shirts?
Yeah, I just got these. Midnight Oil made these for me. I just got them. So they are wonderful.
Well, the story behind that is this one calls me this morning. I'm just barely had a cup of tea, and she goes, "You're on a mission." And I go, and so she said,
"Signed up."
So she said, "Can you get a?" She wants a shirt that says, "I'm a miracle." And so I thought I couldn't find a number for Kaylee, and so I ran into town. I live at 9 Mile.
Uh-huh.
Ran into town, and I said, "Kaylee," and she goes, "But she wanted a V-neck," and Kaylee had no V-necks there, and so will something else do? And she said, "No," and so I'm looking at Kaylee, and I go, "Where else do they have shirts in town?" And so I'm gonna go to the thrift store. So I went over to the thrift store. I found these two. And went back, and so she did it, and I had, you guys were supposed to come like at 1, and I said, 30 minutes, Kaylee, that's all you got. And so it worked out good. But
then there's another.
I was thinking about putting these on, but I have a real aversion to being cold.
You want to tell them about this?
What's that?
You want to tell them about how you got the cell phone?
Oh, yes.
One
of the students at the school... someone put out on Facebook, does anybody have a cell phone they can donate? And one of the students at the school gave me his.
Oh.
So, yeah, it came here and gave me his cell phone so I would have one. I could talk to people and call out and everything. I got to figure out how to use it, but I'm not a tech person.
You got a young man here that can help.
It's a good thing I got my son here. Yeah, but he's getting tired of me borrowing his all the time, so I've got one. But that was really sweet of him. And you know, this place is very special. People come to Alaska because it's so beautiful, you know. And they don't think about the fact that the more spectacular the scenery, the less hospitable it is to live here.
Mm-hmm.
They just, that doesn't click. And they don't realize that the biggest and most important thing about Alaska is the way it affects the people who live here. I came up from down south thinking, I'm going to go out there and live and be, you know, independent and all that kind of stuff. You can't do that here. It's you have to learn to live with others and help each other. And it forces you to not try to be an island, you know, and one person on an island. We can't exist without each other. And the greatest treasure that we have here are the people.
What are your plans for, like, now? Like, how long will you be here? And you're going to stay in Wrangell?
I have a bunch of other family things that are going on, and I don't know where I'm going to land just yet. I can't make any decisions until I hear back from some other information. So this has been my home since 1987, I think, somewhere around there. No, Max was born in 86. I moved here when I was pregnant with him. Yeah, 85. So anyway, I've been here a long time. This is my home. If I end up leaving for a short time, I'll probably wind back up here, you know, but I have some other matters that I have to attend to that I don't know what's going to happen there. So, but I love my job. I love this place. and I'm just glad I'm still here to enjoy it. I don't think I'll be looking for a piece of flat land.
Understandable.
Yeah.
Maybe a little closer to town. No, I won't. You'll do what you do. You'll find somewhere.
Yeah. But when I first came to Alaska in 1979, and I rode the ferry up to Juneau and got on a little float plane, and we were flying out to a little tiny town called Pelican. And as I was in that plane, and I looked down and I saw this big roof with PEL on it. I had no idea what that meant then. But I had the strongest impression hit me, you are home. And it's my home. So I raised all my kids here. And this is my home.
Where were you born?
Ogden, Utah.
Oh, my goodness. I'm from Utah, too.
Oh, okay. Well, I only lived there for my first 6 months of the year. My dad was an Air Force guy, and you know, he'd get shuffled around. But I never really felt at home in any place until that moment on that little itty bitty float plane. Yeah. And I knew that this is my place, and so I've been here ever since. And I've lived in several of the towns in the southeast, Sitka for some time, Pelican, Juneau. I've been in and out of Ketchikan and Petersburg. And they're all home for me.
Could you... like, what were you doing the day of before the slide, you know, before the nighttime? What was your day like that day?
Well, I went to work. I get up really early because I'm a crossing guard in the morning. And I get up early and go down and feed all my animals and everything down at the barn. And I don't think I even... Audie didn't even get out of bed before I left home, I don't think. But anyway, I just went to work, and I came home, and I really don't remember the rest of the evening very much. I usually get on the internet for a little while, and I have to go out to the barn and feed the animals again and do all of that. And I remember having dinner, but other than that, I don't really remember anything else. I ate more than I usually do, and I was really thankful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but I, you know, going to the school is my thing now. You know, I just go down there and I usually get something to smile about every day with those kids. And I started doing that about 3 years ago. And up until that point, I've been a stay-at-home mom raising my family. And the school, I'd always had in mind that I'd help the school out sometime. And when COVID hit and they were screaming for anybody, please come. And I thought, well, maybe even with my hearing loss, they'll try it. And the kids are really good about me not being able to hear. I'll tell them my ears are broken; they don't work. You got to yell right in this ear, and they will. And it's not any big deal. Yeah. So I found a really nice little niche and enjoy it, and had figured that I'd just keep doing that for a good long while. But I've got other things I got to look into first, and they'll figure out what I'm going to do. But, it was just a typical day. Yeah. Get up and go to work.
It's just crazy to think, like, you know, we all live typical days, and then you don't know what's going to happen at all. Mm-mm.
No. No, it was absolutely no warning. There was no chance to do anything. Hear the sound and boom. I guess that the house, well, I'm just guessing at the distance, but maybe it traveled perhaps 250, 300 yards before it hit the other house. And it was probably, somebody told me figured it was probably doing about 35 miles an hour when it was smack. And it was a short period of time, but it was memorable. And the house was an experiment in a different kind of construction. It was built out of the styrofoam panels atop the concrete basement. And part of the reason it was appealing is that we're not carpenters, and it was, we couldn't get a prefab house up our driveway. And we looked and we had to get these things in there, great big panels, and the door cutouts and the window cutouts are there, and you stand them up, bolt them together, glue them together, and then you go to the next, you make another wall, you know, and you can put up, if you really have your act together, you can put a house together in 3 days with a roof on it, and it doesn't get rained on. And so we thought that was pretty appealing. And we went and decided to build it that way. And that house separated from the basement and rode that mud down like a surfboard. And it was just as strong as the architect that designed the house told me it would be. It was really, really strong. It had a 5-star earthquake rating, and it only fell apart when it hit the other house. And it came. They were asking me about this. It just came straight down like this. It didn't twist. It didn't do anything. It just came down like this, and it didn't stop until it hit the other one, and then the piece sheared off and went that way. And it sat there, and there's still stuff coming down, and the lower floor is buried up to the second floor where I was. So, but it didn't buckle, it didn't break, the one bedroom was still intact. So it's just awesome. A really neat way to, I'm really glad we chose to build that house.
How long ago did you build the house?
2004. Yeah. And so I got to enjoy living in it for 19 years. And if I end up building another house somehow, then probably build another one a lot like that one. A little smaller, though. It was the fact that it held together like that and didn't just explode when the mud hit it. It was so incredibly strong. Then that's what saved my life. Yeah. Oh, I did contact the company that built it, and I told them, I hope you make a lot of money. I wholeheartedly endorse your product. But anyway, that's exactly how I feel. They deserve to make a lot of money. They came up with a really neat way to do things, and it saved my life. So I know I've got some hard days ahead. This is not something I have any familiarity with. I have lots of paperwork to do. But I've got people that'll help me, you know, here and lots of old friends. Old friends are gold.
Definitely. Well, I don't know if I have any additional questions, unless you have any more parts of the story that you want to share?
I didn't give that question any thought. I'm a natural storyteller. But I guess I could tell you this. When I first moved here, I lived in Sitka for a long time, and Sitka was my town. Mm-hmm. Not a long time, 8 years, but I really enjoyed Sitka, but we couldn't find any land there. And we came over here with our fishing boat to get some work done because the fellow we bought the boat from said, go to Wrangell. It has a wonderful boat shop. And the guys there is really good, and he'll treat you right. And we came over here, and I was just floored. Somebody came in and says, oh, you guys are going to be here a while they fix that. You can have my car. I got a spare car. Really? You know? And we came back for a couple of more years getting things on the boat tweaked the way we wanted them and really grew to know people and came to appreciate the amazing expertise that's here. The search and rescue crew were pretty first rate. The fellow that fixed our boat, I watched him. His name was Olaf. I can talk about him. But Olaf, he was the man that we were told, he'll treat you right. We needed a thing fixed on our boat, and it was down in the forecastle, which is the bow underneath the deck. Okay. And we pulled in, and this is one of my first experiences with him. And we've got this appointment, and we're here, and I see Olaf over here on this boat, and I see Olaf over here on this boat, and I see Olaf over here on this boat, and I'm thinking, we have an appointment, you know, but, and we're here. And then he comes over, and he's got this little fold-out rule, and he takes a couple little measurements and everything, and then he disappears again. And I think, and he's over here on this boat, and he's over here on that boat, and he's over there on that boat again, and I'm thinking, how much are we paying this guy an hour? You know? And so then he comes back and he's got this stack of pieces of stuff under his arm. And I'm thinking, oh, he's going to make some patterns. Because what we wanted done in Sitka would have taken him quite a while. And no, it was the job already done. And he had cut the pieces so that it would either fit down the ladder into the forecastle or through the skylight, and he put all the pieces down through there, and it went bzz, 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 with his screw gun, and we had what we needed, and he charged me for 45 minutes worth of work.
Wow.
Wow. He was a genius.
That like is Wrangell.
Yeah.
That's Wrangell. And I'll maybe embarrass Ben Curtis a little bit, but I walked in there one day, and I was looking for something, well, the name escapes me. You make soup stock, Japanese soup stock with it, and it's got little tea bags, and you soak them in water, and it's kind of fishy, dashy. And I was looking for some dashy, and I asked him if he would look and see if he could get some. And so he looked into it, and he says, you know, I got to order a whole gross of those if I can get them. He says, I'm really sorry, I won't order it. And I said, that's okay. That's a really oddball item, and that's okay. So time goes by. One day he chases me down a city market, and he says, hey, I was down in Ketchikan, and I saw some boxes of that dashi. I got you three. Is that okay?
Wow.
That's customer service right there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what Wrangell is. And I guess one more last. But my personal favorite, we had a fishing family here whose son had leukemia, and he needed a transplant. Now, maybe this is against the rules. I don't know about if it's okay to talk about this one, but I would think so. It was public news. They didn't have insurance. It was ridiculously expensive. And this little town raised money for it. They had so many bake sales and car washes and people donating and he got his transfusion. What it was for
fund that they use for medical travel.
Bone marrow transfusion, yeah.
Yeah.
And he got it. And he did live a few more years. He did pass away, but this town did that. And I really have felt the effects of that in the last few days because I've been treated exactly the same. And this is a very special place.
I don't have any more questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you, seriously, for allowing us to hear your story.
I'm wondering if we could get pictures of you together. Is that okay?
Go ahead, you be with your mom. I'm gonna.
Let him see your Coast Guard shirt.
No, I don't have one.
Oh, you don't have your Coast Guard shirt on? This guy is Coast Guard.
So you're the son?
Yeah, I'm one of them. I have an older brother, older sister, and a younger brother.
What's your name?
I'm John.
He grew up here, and with the kind of people that he wanted to serve and wanted to be in Coast Guard because he wanted to give something. That's what he told me. He says, I want to give something back, and that's what Raymond was.
Yeah. When did you arrive here?
The day that they found Mom. Was that Tuesday?